My mother owns a Curves health club. You know, Curves for Women is what it is now, just called Curves. And she has owned it now for almost 10 years. Not quite, but just about that. And she got into it because her cousin owned a couple in New York, and his daughter owned a couple in New York, and this area was sort of starting to bustle and get open for those. And so she got one. And, you know, it's really interesting now watching this go, and the whole area of fitness and the eating habits of our country and all this sort of stuff. It really. So my mom's cousin's daughter, I guess my second cousin, we were talking one day, and she said that she gets in front of like groups and does talks with groups talking about nutrition, and one of the, she says, you know, we have this notion that we just can deal with our food, and we just diet, and it's going to take care of our food and our weight problems and our, and she says, which it's not the case. Because if diets just worked, everybody who was in these little diet groups would be set, would be taken care of. But we have this notion, okay, if I just watch what I eat and I just take care of that, I'm going to be all right. Well, even if we throw in exercise, even it shows doesn't exercise doesn't, if we eat right and we exercise, we can still be. And we fail to see the bigger picture. See the bigger picture of things like, you know, the every year or every so many years the farm bill, it's called the farm bill, gets run through the government, and that determines where the subsidies go, right? And so when that happens, basically it tells farmers, hey, grow this. It's a governmental sort of, hey, if you grow this, we'll give you money. And so you know what? They grow that. It's amazing how that works, right? It's why corn is everywhere. I was at a distillery in Milwaukee. It's a little sort of micro distillery, and they were talking about it. And so they said they had a little quiz. They said, do you know what vodka is made out of? That's what everybody says. And he says, actually, no. Almost no vodka is made from potato. Here's the thing. Vodka is made out of whatever you can get your hands on, right? So they make their vodka out of, he goes, what do you think we make it out of? And I went, oh, corn. He said, that's right, because it's the cheapest stuff for us to get a hold of. It's why the sort of the mega brews use corn solids in their fermentation process instead of just malted barley to ferment, because it's cheap. It's why corn syrup is in everything we drink, right? So if we begin to talk about food and me and how I might want to lose weight, I can sit there and I can really focus just on my plate, but fail to see that this is a huge and large issue. You watch things like Food Inc. I don't know if any of you have seen that documentary, but that, I mean, you know, and Supersize Me and all of the ways that are, you know, we've tried to take a factory model and create a food culture. Right? We miss all of that. We can talk about all of our choices out there, but when it comes down to it, we're all focused in on this. We just miss that really we don't have a whole lot of choices in it. We participate in it whether we want to or not. All right, so I throw that out there because I started to think about it. It's a lot the same way with sin. We focus on, well, we, not necessarily us in this room, but we as a culture, when we begin to talk about sin, we really begin to focus on all of the bad stuff we do. I've used that phrase again and again, but as we've talked about this over the past couple months here during Lent and such, but and we miss Well, if we focus just on the bad stuff that we do, then really Christianity just becomes a behavior modification program. All right? And so all of the sermons that get up and tell people how to live better lives, that's all religion is good for. How do we control our bad impulses, or how do we treat our neighbor nicer, how do we live more kind, how do we just do things a little bit better? Okay. Sin, we have a very narrow realm of sin, and we want to not necessarily see anything bigger and beyond that, right? We don't want to see that perhaps, the food culture in America forces people who live in poverty to eat really crappy food. We don't want to necessarily think about how we participate in the larger scheme of things where, participating in things like pornography and sweatshop labor. And I mean, all of the things that we get, because, you know, now we want to buy things that's sort of ingrained in our head. We want to buy things at the cheapest possible price to save us money. Well, so then, you know, in order for things like that to happen, we send jobs overseas where people are paid really sort of, well, they're paid something. It can be pretty tough working conditions, because we want them to produce as much as possible for as little as possible, so we can buy it for as little as possible, all right? And we sort of engage in this massive cyclical system. Or when we go over to Starbucks to understand that the coffee that we buy over there comes from through basically two or three companies that is grown, you know, through various stages of actually in the industry they call them coyotes, and so that the farmers sell it to a middleman who sells it to a middleman who sells it to a middleman. So the farmers don't usually make enough to live off of from the coffee we drink and we pay $2.50 for. It is a massive, massive thing, this sin, that we participate in ways that we can't even imagine. And so those words from 1 John that we hear also in our brief order for confession and forgiveness, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves. When we deal with sin, and it's not just about things going right in my life. We have to see sin as huge and intertwined with every aspect of life. And it's big. So what do we do? Well, there are plenty of folks out there who go, well, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Because, you know, when it comes to food, right, they go, look, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me anymore. I'm just going to go eat what I want. If I try to eat well, ultimately I find out that all this stuff's bad for you anyway, and it's all going to kill you, and it's all going to... I mean, it can run you down into a mode of despair. Just whatever. All right, it is what it is. You can go super ultra vigilant and try to only eat local and only do this and only do that and never, and you know, fail to understand that you're still not saving yourself. There are still problems that you're getting into. Same way with sin. So, you know, if you have cable, you know, you participate in sort of one of the largest distribution networks of pornography that's out there. Oh. If you have mind went blank here for a minute. Just plenty of ways that our lives, no matter what we do, betray the brokenness of the world. And they do come to root, and I don't want to necessarily take it away. All of this brokenness does come to root in very real ways in our lives. When we talk about people behind their backs, when we engage in greedy activity, when we believe that things are scarce and we have to have it, it has to be ours, all of that can lead us to simply despair and go, well, screw it, I don't care. If it's all going to be like that, it's all broken anyway, why don't I just play along? Just engage in everything as it is. Which certainly happens. Got to learn to play the game, we're told. You know, got to do it right. But what does that mean for us when 1 John, in that 1 John there at the end, if anyone does sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous, and he is the atoning sacrifice for our sins, and not for ours only, but also for the sins of the whole world. What's our calling? Not to despair, right? Here we stand on the other side of Easter, on the other side of the resurrection, where we've been told Christ is risen. And with him being risen, it means he's beat the power of death, right? Death is that ultimate power that no matter how much we try, no matter how much surgery we might have, how much fitness we might do, how well we eat, you know what? We're still going to die. It is the thing that still takes our loved ones from us. It's the thing that breaks us apart, sort of seemingly ultimately. Jesus, that atoning sacrifice, he is the one who makes us at one with God. He is the one who ends that power. So what is the response of the early church? We heard it in Acts. They realize that there is something here to Jesus being alive. It signifies something bigger than just me and my activities. So instead of despairing and just going about their own way and hiding away from people, right, the group in Acts gathers together and begins to live a life that proclaims the unity we have with Christ, to proclaim what the end is going to look like, a life in union, unity with one another, unity with God. So they, you know, it says in Acts that they all lived together, they all sold everything they had and shared everything in common. Had a big discussion with a bunch of other pastors who so desperately wanted to sort of explain that away. Well, it was an ideal, and it wasn't really. And I said, well, why do we read it? Why do we have it? Because clearly something like this happened. Whether it was the ideal and whether they attained it or not, I don't know. But I think clearly it got recorded because this early group realized life had changed. Life as we know it has changed. Something has happened, and that is Jesus, the resurrected one, where those powers of sin and death have no more power. Not ultimately. Talked about them giving their testimonies. Well, testimonies in what we say and in what we do. Right. Thomas wants to see and to believe. What if we are the ones who are Christ in the world, right? We are the ones who carry Christ, making Christ visible. What does it say for us if we just want a little behavior modification, or we just want to feel better about ourselves, sort of therapy. But what if we as a community, united with Christ in the waters of baptism, are able to take him out and to proclaim his action in the world by our lives? Knowing that we participate, yes, in these fallen powers of sin, but that we begin to find ways to proclaim their end, subverting them, turning them over, to understand the big cosmic nature of sin and yet continue to live in such a way, trusting, knowing that Christ will end them finally, once and for all. We are strengthened in that journey. Because when Thomas says, "I won't believe until I put my finger in his hands and my hand in his side," Jesus comes and gives him that. He gives that to us too. Christ is placed in our hands and on our tongues every week. The body and blood of Christ given to us, united with us again, forgiving us, making us whole, strengthening us for the task where he says, "As the Father has sent me, so I send you into the world." Very clear and determined points. Walking little Christs in the world, that we may make him known. Thanks be to God.